Chicago held its mayoral election on Tuesday, and from a crowded field of 14 candidates, two women emerged ahead of the pack. Lori Lightfoot, a former federal prosecutor and Chicago Police Board president, was one.
People said that I had some good ideas, but that I couldn't win. And it's true that not every day that a little black girl in a low-income family from a segregated steel town makes the runoff to be the next mayor of the third largest city in the country.
And Tony Preckwinkle, the Cook County Board President.
We've taken clear stands and have committed real plans to make sure that our city finally works for all of us.
The two Democrats are set to face off in an April 2nd runoff election, and no matter who wins, Chicago will have a black woman as mayor for the first time in the city's history. For more on this week's election, I'm joined now by Natalie Moore, reporter for the Race, Class, and Communities Desk at WBEZ. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Tanzina.
So, close race on Tuesday. Give us a little bit more on Lightfoot, one of the women who will be in the runoff.
She was the president of the police board here in Chicago. She was appointed by Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and she became a critic. And she led a task force that released a scathing report about police misconduct and brutality. And all of this came in the wake of the shooting of the black teenager Laquan McDonald, 16 shots by a white police officer that led to him actually being found guilty in court. On the other hand, there are people who say that Lightfoot is not as progressive as she makes herself out to be. She's a former prosecutor. She used to be on another police oversight agency that many say did not do a good job in reprimanding or firing police officers who were causing harm in communities.
What can you tell us about Tony Preckwinkle? What kind of campaign did she run?
Tony Preckwinkle has a lot of name recognition. She is president of the Cook County Board here, which is massive. It includes our hospital system, our criminal justice system. She is someone who reformers say has a better handle on criminal justice reform. She's also faced criticism for wanting to put too many taxes onto people, including a sugary beverage tax that people were so upset at that it ended up being rescinded.
And of course, what's interesting is that voter turnout for this election was only 34%. What do you attribute that to?
You know, that's something that a lot of us are trying to scratch our heads and figure out. That number is pretty steady when you look at our mayoral elections. And we have a nonpartisan primary, and the runoff is nonpartisan, too. You know, when people say, on one hand, I think that there was a lot of civic engagement. Getting an open mayoral seat in this city is something that is rare, and there wasn't a predetermined candidate who swept in. There were 14 candidates of different races, men and women from different parts of the city, some who've had statewide office, some who have had no political experience. No candidate is perfect, but I think that there was a lot to choose from, and also think that voters were demanding answers and demanding for change and wanting to break away from corruption and machine politics and hold more accountability. So when I look at those numbers, I think some people might have been overwhelmed from a pool of 14 people.
What's also interesting to me is that neither of these candidates, neither of the women that are now in the runoff, got the majority of the black vote. What is that about?
I think it signals a shift in what black politics is in Chicago. You know, Chicago has a deep history, but black politics, our first black president came from the south side of Chicago. Our first elected black female senator, Carol Moseley Braun, in the 1990s. So there's a lot that's there and a lot of political power that's been harnessed. Harold Washington was our first black mayor, elected in 1983, and voter turnout was an astonishing 82%. But back then, the idea was that you needed a consensus candidate. And I think today, people see that they have choices, and skin color doesn't necessarily mean that person has the best policy agenda for you. But it also shows that there was cross-racial alliances. The fact that two black women emerged as the front runners without winning the black vote. Doesn't mean they didn't have black support. It just means that they did not win the most votes in a black ward. But they still had Tony Preckwinkle, for example, in many black wards, came in second.
Let's talk about some of the issues that were at the center of the election. One thing that's been part of the conversation is this community benefits agreement with the Obama Foundation. What's in that agreement and why is it so important right now?
Well, quickly, the Obamas want to build a presidential center on the South Side in Jackson Park. It's next door to a neighborhood, Woodlawn, a black community that has low housing values, but also is close to the University of Chicago. So it has some mixed income elements in many ways. But residents there want a community benefits agreement. But what's key to note is that the vacancy in that community, the empty lots, are mostly owned by the city of Chicago. And so the city really has the most power to reshape the neighborhood that the Obamas hope their center is an economic engine. And so the community benefits agreement is a binding written document that people want. And they want it to have guarantees about affordable housing and property taxes.
Let's talk a little bit about affordable housing, though, because gentrification and displacement are also major issues in Chicago's 20th ward.
I would probably push back on gentrification a little bit because the research is showing that black neighborhoods don't gentrify. There has been population loss and concerns of displacement. The gentrification that we see in the city tends to be in more Latino areas.
When you say black neighborhoods don't gentrify, what does that mean?
Research from Harvard, University of Illinois, Chicago shows that the markers that we see for gentrification are not happening in black South Side neighborhoods.
I see. Okay. Does the affordable housing crisis seem like something either of these front runners are going to be able to deal with just generally in the city?
So both of them have said that they support a community benefits agreement, and that is a change because the current mayor has not, and the city has said that they don't plan to do that. They have said that they are concerned about these issues, but having a written legal document takes it to another level.
Was there a main takeaway for you? Do you think the voters were sending a message this year? We've got about 45 seconds left.
I think the message, so you have one candidate who has been in the political trenches and one who is saying, hey, I'm not part of this culture. Both have pluses and minuses to many voters, but I think that we're in an era where people are demanding more policy, better policy from their elected officials. And even though voter turnout was low, I think that there still is engagement and people see that the city is stratified and they want more equity.
Natalie Moore is a reporter for the Race, Class, and Communities Desk for WBEZ. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.